On February 17, 2014, Jonathan was interviewed by the police. That was before Gage was ever brought in for questioning. Even though they drove to the party together, both Gage and his cousin Jonathan asserted that Jonathan did not leave the party with Gage that night. But if you listen carefully, their police interviews may indicate otherwise.
He ran down the hill and he swung and hit him. He didn't really know if his arm hit him or if he actually connected or what. And I guess they both, from him running down the speed, and I guess they both pretty well collided, bottom line. Even if he had hit him afterwards and they both tumbled down, and I guess he got on top of him. And I don't really know if he threw a punch or a 100 punches, but he got his money, I guess. I didn't have to tag him if he ripped out his pocket, if he still had his hand running with it. And then all of a sudden the cops showed up. And
you're listening to Speaking of Crime with your hosts, Gia and John. Just so you have the timeline right in your mind, let us clarify the order of things. Jonathan initially spoke to the police on the 17th. Then Gage came in later in the evening on the same day for his first interview. A couple days later, on February 19th, Gage was called back in for a second police interview. Remember, Jonathan initially called in to Crime Stoppers when he learned of the $15,000 reward, and he wanted to cash in on that reward. He mentions it right off the bat, within the first 2 minutes of the police interview. Before we play the audio clip, we just wanted to let you know that the sound quality of the police interview is very poor and has sections that are quite staticky and maybe loud in your headphones, so you may want to adjust your volume level.
Just tell me what brought you here tonight. I mean, I seen that a family officer, or son, or grandma officer, anything, and uncle officer, nephew, and brother officer, just anything like that. My baby's not really told him. I knew in the noticeable way. I knew everybody, so they gotta be the ones. And I see someone put $15,000 for a 5-day missing person. There's something serious going on. So I just came in, you know.
Praveen's body was found on February 18th, 1 day after Jonathan's interview. So on the 17th, when Jonathan was interviewed, no one could have known if Praveen was still alive or not, except for the murderer, of course. So it's very telling that Jonathan keeps saying a family lost their son, a grandma lost their grandchild, and keeps using the word lost when referring to Praveen. He clearly knows more than he is telling the police. The detective then asks Jonathan to tell him about the night of February 12th and asks what he was doing that night.
Did a little work for my grandma and grandpa and went to my buddy Dylan's house, which I told you about. And him, me, and my buddy Preston and Gage all went to Bumville.
So how did the party, were you drinking?
No.
Okay, you're not drinking?
I got sick.
Okay.
I'm getting sick before we got there.
What kind of sick were you?
Puking.
Yeah. Okay.
I ended up passing out on the couch for about 2.5 hours.
Were any of your buddies drinking?
Yeah.
Okay. Was Gage drinking?
Not as far as I know, Gage wasn't drinking.
Okay. Was, you know...
That's as far as I know.
Jonathan tells the police that Gage wasn't drinking, the same story that Gage told the state trooper the night of the crime. It's pretty clear that Gage and his cousin had previously corroborated their stories. However, in Gage's second interview with police, which you will hear soon, he himself admits that he was drinking that night.
Earlier, you had told me that at some point, Gage decided to leave.
Yeah.
Okay. And did you go with him?
No.
Okay. Did Preston or Dylan go with him?
No. He had asked us. He said, I'm going home. He goes, I'll run you guys the friend tour if you want to go. He goes, I'm just going home. I'm not feeling this anymore. Yeah. And like I said, as far as I knew, he was sober. But like, you never know the people. Like I was telling her, I know some of them. They've done, they could do 10 pills and they look like they, just take a cup of coffee and they're fine to go. So.
Okay. So what was your plan to get back home to West Frankfort? Did you have one?
No, the main one was to call Preston's girlfriend. Well, whatever, friend, whatever. Well, love buddy, whatever.
At this point, you know how late this was when Gage decided to leave?
Like I was telling her, I know it was in between 10 and 1.
Sometimes you attend one.
Okay. Not in that area.
Okay.
I know it was early, but it wasn't late. And you know, that's the kind of thing that I don't think it was after midnight.
Okay.
If it was, it was barely in that region.
Okay.
Like I said, after midnight, it was around the area, like the time that the trooper, you know, because like I told her, I think he had told him to run. He asked me to run in like two or three different houses or something.
Okay.
And he was like, oh, well, they ain't home or something like that.
Jonathan gives a window of 10 p.m. to 1 a.m. when asked what time Gage left the party. And unfortunately, the officer doesn't press him on that and asks for a more precise time frame or any other details. The detective should have asked for much more information. What time did Jonathan allegedly fall asleep at the party? What time was it when he woke up? Was Gage at the house party prior to Jonathan passing out, or had he already left? Was he at the house when Jonathan woke up? And if so, do they know what time that was? It's hard to believe that Gage just left his cousin at the party while he was asleep with no way of getting home. All of these questions would have led to not only a more detailed timeline, but could have indicated if Jonathan was being truthful or not.
Gage left alone at the party, okay. And then when was the next time, I guess how did you end that night? Did you stay there or did you get a ride home?
Yeah, I got a ride home.
Okay.
Up 2:30.
They took you back to Frankfurt?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. When was the next time you talked to Gage?
Next morning, 10 or 9.
So about Thursday morning?
Mm-hmm.
Was this in person or on the phone?
Yeah, he picked me up.
Okay. What were you guys doing?
We gotta go do some more work from where we were. But wait. Yeah, I think we were going to go do some work. We're going to go.
Thursday morning?
Yeah.
Okay. And did you guys have any conversation about the previous night?
Yeah. That's what we talked about. He just said that he was blown. He asked us all if we wanted a ride. He was leaving. And then the kid said he needed a ride, so he gave him a ride. And I guess the kid took him to one or two houses and was playing around with him. And, you know, or the same, no one was there. And then he started getting real tough with him and reaching over and poking him and stuff. And then I guess... I don't know how the $25 came into play, but like I said, like in the cup holder or something. I think like he reached over and grabbed it, and Gage asked me to get back like 10 times. They were grabbing my phone, and the guy tried to jump out, and Gage spit up a little bit, and he goes, no, man, you're not getting out until you take my money. Well, they pulled over, going down 13, pulled over by B-Dubs right there,
mm-hmm.
right by the ditch. The kid ran down the ditch, and Gage ran down there and tackled him, and got his money back, and I guess... scuffling around or whatever they were doing, you know, whatever, you know, like saying, you'll figure that out when you see him or whatever. And then they sent Gage chasing the cops, and old boy took off running, and he went up there and just talked to the cop, and told the cop, you know, I got gave the kid a ride, he stole my $25. And...
The detective then asks Jonathan how Gage described the person he picked up that night. Pay very close attention to when Jonathan says, I just recognized him, but then quickly changes course.
Light-skinned, you know, he said he wasn't, that's when I started noticing him, all of a sudden started cooking the play, he wasn't very tall, but he wasn't like a skinnier person, you know, he was kind of a cut-up kind of kid, and they told me, he was light-skinned and everything, that's how I just recognized him. Everything just started, it came into play.
Did Gage mention anything about this person, like nationality, or like was he from a different country, you know?
I remember he said something about like, he's like Mexican or Filipino or something like that, you know?
He then asks Jonathan how Gage described the fight to him.
He ran down the hill, and he swung, and hit him. He didn't really know if his arm hit him, or if he actually connected or what, and I guess they both... From him running down the speed, and I guess they both pretty well collided, bottom line. Even if he had hit him afterwards, and they both tumbled down, and I guess he got on top of him. And I don't really know if he threw a punch or 100 punches, but he got his money, I guess. I didn't have to tag him if he ripped out his pocket, if he still had his hand running with it. And then all of a sudden, the cop showed up. And
did Gage say anything about like what condition this guy was in physically after the fight?
He just said that he was limping, but he didn't know if it was him limping or maybe falling down the hill or what. He just said he wasn't
moving. He said he didn't know if he was just slow or if that's just how he was.
Okay.
He said it wasn't nothing, like he wasn't like crawling on the ground or anything, but he was just like, looked like kind of having a little bit of limp, trying to get over the fence and stuff.
You just heard Jonathan reference the fence that Monica mentioned in the last episode. It's a little hard to hear what he says, but at the very end of that last sentence, he said this. He wasn't like crawling on the ground or nothing, but he was just like, looked like he kind of had a limp. Kind of hard to get over the fence and stuff. This is a thin barbed wire fence at the bottom of the hill, just before the tree line. So from where Gage pulled over on the side of the road, you would go down a steep hill. About 10 feet in from there is where this fence is located. The fence cannot be seen by the naked eye if you're at the top of the hill, and frankly, it's hard to see even if you're closer to it. Monica has driven that same route countless times, and she had no idea there was a fence at the bottom of that hill. It's also a very specific detail for someone to know and mention if they hadn't seen it and weren't at the scene of the crime. Even the way Jonathan describes Praveen struggling to walk is so detailed that it seems like an account from someone who was actually present and witnessed it for themselves. The police could have and should have tracked Jonathan's phone to see if he was in fact with Gage that night in the area Praveen was found. Jonathan continued to make attempts to obtain the reward money. The Carbondale police reached out to Praveen's family, suggesting they pay out the reward.
They said, so when are you going to give the reward money? And we said, then my husband said, you know, there was a clause in the thing that we put the reward, like for person who will help find Praveen alive or help with the criminal investigation, something like that. There was a clause in there. So my husband said, we will give the money, but we'll have to find out whether this guy who came up had anything to do with it, you know, and then he said, we will of course go through you and we will give the money. The money was never paid out. We received a letter, official letter from Carbondale Police a month after Praveen was gone, asking for the reward money and said if it was, I think I sent you that letter, if it wasn't for Jonathan Stanley, we never would have found your son. So it was like kind of them telling us it's your obligation to pay him.
Jonathan even had the audacity to contact Lovely asking about the reward. A few days after Praveen was found, he sent her a direct message on Facebook.
One of the police officers told me that he keeps calling them almost every day for the money. And he said, don't be surprised if you get a knock on your door. And I got scared. So we installed cameras around the house, you know. And then when we had the private investigator, he's like, don't worry, he doesn't even have a car, so he's not going to come to your house. But Jonathan sent a message, Facebook message, to my Facebook page the day after Praveen was found. And I did not see that till December. See, I was not a Facebook user, a big user at that time. Now I know everything. But at that time, you know, I was going through my thing and then it said other. And I had tons of messages from all over the world, people sending me condolences. And I scrolled through and I see Jonathan Stanley. I'm like, oh my God. So I click on it and it says, Mrs. Varughese's total spelling or everything is, you know, like it, I'm Jonathan Stanley. I'm the guy who gave the information to the police. Please call me. I have more information for you, you know. And then I think a week later, he has another message again. Mrs. Varughese, are you there? See, I did not see that for many months. So by that time, we had the lawyer. So I called him and I said, should I call him? And he said, no, don't call him. So I did not call him. But Robinson used that at the trial to question Jonathan Stanley. But Jonathan Stanley had sent Facebook messages to every single person that had a last name Varghese. You know, Varghese is a common last name in Malay, the Kerala community. So one of Praveen's friends, Shiji Varghese, he sent a message to him also. See, people, sometimes if it's in the other message, they don't see it. So he was sending messages to everyone. So we did not pay that money. But if you, I will send you Jonathan's interview to the police. When I listened to his audio, I could not understand a single word he's saying. His English is something else. I don't know what he's saying. So I had to read the script. So in that, he's like, oh, they're offering a lot of money. So this kid is somebody, they love him or something like that, you know. So that's his main aim, was to collect money. So for the longest time, we thought he was also, I still don't know how much part he did in all this. Because if you listen to his interview, many of the things that he is saying, it feels like he was there to see it.
Next week, you will hear Gage's second interview for yourself, and how the police were either fooled by these two simpleton teenagers, or there was corruption in the force and they didn't want to do their job to solve the case. It seems like the latter, considering how much evidence there was and how unbelievable and sloppy both Gage and Jonathan's stories were. If you're interested in this story and you want to know more about the case, you can check out our social media pages. We will be sharing videos of the police interviews, photos, and documents from the case. We are at Speaking of Crime on Facebook, Instagram, and TikTok, and at Crime Speaking on Twitter. Please help us share Praveen's story.